Hello, hello, hello. I am your Selena hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz. And welcome to In Yo Mouth!
In Yo Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood
to lick it right, lick it good, show you how to
Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets.
So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Yo Mouth.
I got the goosebumps.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey there, and welcome back, folks. Once again, I am your hostess with the mostess, Munoz. And how y'all doing? Folks, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we are in the second week of August, and this summer has flown by with a blink of an eye. Where has it gone? I haven't even been to the beach. I haven't been to the beach, y'all. What is happening? But I have been in this heat wave that is New York City, and it is not cute. It is not cute at all. Not much to report this week, except for, you know, I just got back from the beautiful Martha's Vineyard working, and I will be, oh my God, how exciting. I will be in Mexico City for the weekend coming up with my brother. You know, I had a pandemic 40th birthday and an Omicron 41st birthday, and he wanted to do something for me. So we're taking a long weekend in Mexico City, and I have never been. So I'm very, very, very excited for a little bit of safe travel and a little bit of exploration and definitely the food. But I want to get to the getting on today because the gay celebrities, the gay food celebrities, especially the television ones, and we have an OG of food TV with us today. So without further ado, please help me welcome the one, the only Chef Dave Martin. Say hi.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I am great. First and foremost, thank you so much for giving me of your busy time, taking time out of your busy, busy schedule to come and talk with me on my Big Gay Food Podcast. It is an honor to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm super psyched. Yes, super psyched to have some fun today.
Yes. But Dave, you told me before I hit the record button, you've peeped me, you've stalked me a little, right? You've listened. Yeah. And so I think you're familiar, right? Or I think you prepped yourself. Oh, yeah. And not everybody does. So thank you for doing the homework.
You're welcome. I needed to know what I was getting into.
Oh, my God. And listen, I don't know if you're ready for the roller coaster, but I got to do what I got to do. And in the grand tradition of In Yo Mouth, I need to wish you happy National S'mores Day.
Hooray. Okay.
Oh, my God. You sound so excited.
I don't love s'mores, but yes, I will have one today.
Okay. All right. You know what? I am s'mores indifferent, maybe. I think it's too sweet. I just think it's all too sweet. I will make one. Yeah. I will toast that marshmallow to perfection, and then I will take 2 bites and then put it down.
You're
and
over.
Be like, I'm over. It's way
too
sweet.
It's a sugar blast. Yeah. For sure.
You know? I mean, like, the smoke of it all, right? Yeah, the campfire in the summer, the bonfire in the summer. I've had none of that this summer. None of it.
Yeah, well, it's been too hot, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I've been blessed and highly favored that I've traveled a bunch this summer, but it's been to places that hasn't happened. No beach, no bonfires, no clam bakes, no nothing.
Not yet. Know? There's still time.
Yes, but it's flying by, right?
Yeah, it's super. Yeah, it's almost over, really. I don't want to think about it. Well, I do kind of because I'm working a ton, but it's all good.
Yeah. I mean, you are in consulting. Have we put some like s'mores desserts on anybody's menu or like, you know, a s'mores no, ice cream?
I do. You know, one of my clients, actually, she loves s'mores. And so when I do s'mores, I actually make the marshmallows from scratch, which that actually does make a big difference because they're a little cleaner. I actually use agave versus regular sugar. So they're a little higher end. And there's no Hershey's chocolate because, let's be real, that's not chocolate. So, you know, what's really important is good, real chocolate, homemade marshmallow. It definitely makes a more premium s'more.
Yeah. Are you making homemade graham crackers, too?
No. I'm not. I mean, I could. I've thought about it, but I haven't gone that far.
That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. Well, Dave, you're in luck because, and I don't make these things up. This comes from foodimentary.com. This is 4.5 years later that I still haven't met the person behind Foodimentary who's decided all these national holidays that are applied everywhere, but it's also National Banana Split Day.
Oh, serious?
Yeah.
Okay.
You get a double day.
Okay, sweet. Well, it's all about sugar then.
Yeah, right? Banana splits also. Not something I'm here for.
No, same. Yeah, two. Yeah, I mean, National Tequila Day sounds a lot better to me.
And dangerous, right?
Yes.
And dangerous, kind of.
Kind
but we're going to get
Candy.
Into the we're going to get into the tequila of it all. And thank you for the teaser and the plug, because we love a teaser and a plug on the podcast for sure. Well, no matter what you celebrate today, whether it's National S'mores Day, National Banana Split Day, or you know, National Take As Many Shots of Tequila Responsibly As You Can Day.
Yes.
We celebrate you. And moving right along into this day in gay history, because the world is a mess and we need to keep our history alive, especially these days. Dave, did you know, and I picked two today just because I found this really, really interesting. In 1888, a lifelong trans man is discovered as a patient at an Iowa prison hospital. There's no other information available, just that they were discovered in 1888 at this prison hospital. You know, I was like, when I dig through this history, the further back I can go, the further interested I am, even though, sure, like, it's just like a little snippet. It right. just goes to show and prove, like, we've been here, we are here, especially the trans community, you know?
Right. That's, I didn't know things were documented that far back. I mean, that's interesting for sure.
Yes, of course.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, of course not, because our history, although we have been here, isn't really well documented, right? And it takes people, it's one of the reasons I do this, to keep it alive, to keep it moving forward, you know? And the other little tidbit I found interesting and very apropos for what's happening in the world today is that in 2011, in the Czech Republic, several thousand people marched through Prague in the Czech capital's first gay pride festival. The event was peaceful, though there were some 300 vocal opponents. Shout out to you in the Czech Republic, all our gay brothers and sisters and others out there. You know?
Yeah. Wow. Only 11 years ago. That's not very long ago.
No. And it's like, it's surprising. It's like our history is vast, but not necessarily that long ago. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's new and evolving and, you know, hoping to keep it moving forward. But there's a lot of crazy shit out there today that, you know, I'm feeling like we're going back in time.
Yeah. for what reason at that?
I know.
You know, crazy. For what reason at that? But we're here to celebrate.
Yep.
We're here to celebrate the entire LGBTQ community in all of its forms. And it's one of the main reasons I do this. And it's and I just love these little factoids. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're really fun. Sometimes they're really serious. And sometimes they're just really, really interesting. Right. And I wish we knew a little bit more about what happened in 1888 to this person. That
for
was
sure.
That was in jail. You know what I mean?
I'm sure. So that, yeah, I'm sure it was very difficult.
So, right? Or really, just really interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like how this person navigated life. So shout out to you, our ancestors, whomever you are and wherever you are right now. Sidebar, I recently took a walk through a Redwood State National Park out in Guerneville. California. Have you ever been to the Redwoods?
Yeah.
Have you ever?
Yeah. Years ago as a kid. It was like a family trip.
It's the first time, speaking of the ancestors, it's the first time ever. It's if you ever have a chance in your mouth, listeners, to do this, I say 100% go. Your phone doesn't work because it just doesn't work. Like the trees are like, no ma'am. And I was alone. I was just alone through this like vast thing. And maybe it's a little oogie boogie or whatever, but I really could feel, because I was on indigenous land at one point, it is no more, but like you really could feel the spirits and you really could feel the energy and you really could feel these things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this bird
been there forever.
Yeah, thousands of years.
Yes.
And this bird followed me for a good 20 minutes. I was this bird, it was really, really interesting, you know?
Yeah, very spiritual.
Speaking of the ancestors, and it just, you know, sidebar and little tidbit, and like that just this whole conversation reminded me of. But I want to get to the getting on and celebrate you. And in your mouth, listeners, if you didn't know, but you probably already do, Dave Martin is an American chef who first made a name for himself with an unforgettable appearance on the inaugural season of Bravo's Top Chef. Since the show, he's gone on to have a busy career in restaurant consulting, events, and private chef work. While Dave loves the cuisine of every country he visits, his love for Mexican food and tequila is beyond compare. You and me both, Dave. You and me both.
Perfect.
Most recently, Dave released his book, The Tequila Diet, an homage to the world's greatest spirit and a guide to some of the most loved classic foods of Mexico. This easy-to-follow book is a collection of recipes influenced by Dave's adolescent years growing up in Southern California, combined with his adult adventures traveling through Mexico. His deep reverence for tequila is apparent throughout his use of the spirit in his tasty cocktails and several dishes. Welcome, Dave. Welcome.
Thank you.
We have the OG of Food TV with us today.
Is that crazy? I know. It's so crazy how it's all blown up since the original days.
Yeah, I remember. I was there.
Oh, really?
I was there. I was
really?
There. Listen, this face looks young, but she is almost 42.
Well, you're doing good. Whatever you're doing, it's working.
Celery and turmeric juice.
I stand
by it, fresh. Listen, Dave, I usually start at a food beginning here, and I want to start at a different point of your food beginning and this Top Chef journey. And what's it like being like at the precipice of what food competition show TV was like and where it's at now? What is it like seeing that trajectory? What is it like, you know, being part of the beginning of that experience?
Yeah, you know, it's such a big evolution, right? This is, you know, we filmed in 2005 and it aired starting in 2006. So yeah, I'm more than 42. But it's come such a long way now. There's just so many shows, you know what I mean? It's like there's such a almost a saturation of things, and it's all good, but I mean, at what point does it go back to a little bit more organic and real. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like, I'm a reality junkie. One, it's the main genre that I watch, but I'm also a byproduct of that, you know, from doing Top Chef and Chopped and Cutthroat Kitchen and all these shows. And I just turned down a show just because I was like, you know, at what point do we stop? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, not that it's bad, but it's like, you know, and I want it to keep going. I don't want it to end for other people to have the opportunity, but I just think that it can become too extreme.
Yeah. I mean, we have every genre of food, reality TV out there from, well, what's the name of the show with Nicole Byer? Nailed it. There's that Crime Scene Kitchen.
Is it Cake? I mean, you know, which there is a new one. Have you seen that one?
Which one?
It's called Is It Cake?
No. Oh, yeah. Is It Cake? Yep, where they make these things that look like real items, right? There's Anthony has a new show coming out, you know, Queer Eyes. Teaser, if you will, for somebody on this podcast. there's just so many that it's just like, You make a good point. At what point is it too much? There's British Bake Off, which we all love.
Love.
Right? Which actually kind of...
I love the OG cast, but whatever with the new ones. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
The host. Those two gals, they were so much better. Like, the two...
Those two gals were hysterical.
They were the show. I loved them. They loved
right?
them.
Right? Yeah. And nobody could compare.
No.
To the two of them. You know?
Yeah.
They were the Ryan Seacrest and Brian Dunkelman.
totally. I agree.
Sidebar, you said you're a reality TV show junkie, and we love some reality TV here on In Your Mouth, the Royal We, because it's just me and this photo of Lainey Kazan behind me. what other reality TV is there that you're into?
I mean, I do certain branches of Housewives, not all of them. I do.
Which ones? That's what I was aiming for.
Okay, I'm told Beverly Hills.
Obviously.
Beverly Hills, New York. I do Potomac a little bit. I don't really do Atlanta. I know people love Atlanta. I just don't. Dubai's out, so I'm doing Dubai.
I'm still like on the fence with Dubai, right? And it's so funny because I watched the Ladies of London on the treadmill, right? And so I was hoping for that Caroline Stanberry, but that like it's I think it's all too performative. All those ladies are literally doing it for the camera, and I'm still on the fence, but I love an ultimate girls trip too now.
The second one is Phaedra, like,
yeah.
I knew her from Atlanta and I didn't, she was okay. I mean, her ex-husband was really hot, but the good one that went to jail. But
I'm Apollo. We were all Apollo fans.
Hello, yeah. But the second one, I mean, she is so fucking hilarious on there. I mean, I am just loving her. I'm just like...
She's a peacekeeper.
She's
the peacekeeper for once. You know, Phaedra Parks, right, although became problematic on Real Housewives of Atlanta, hands down had the best reads of any franchise of Housewives.
Yes.
The best reads.
I'm seeing her now. I'm loving it.
Oh, love it, right? I'm a Lisa Rinna stan for sure, though she's a big problem, but I love her to death.
That's why she's there,
Yep, right? I have all my theories. We can go on and on about this. And before I move on, have you discovered Real Housewives Orders on Instagram?
No.
Friend to the pod, it's an entire Instagram that's dedicated to the Real Housewives ordering food.
No way. Okay. All right. I'm interested.
He's Canadian. He's they're amazing. Go follow. Shout out to you. But we love a reality TV moment here on and reference here on In Your Mouth. But speaking of food, where did the love of food come from?
You know, I was really lucky. I grew up in a very middle-class family, and my mom and dad both worked, you know, the old-school 70s thing. And, you know, my mom still made food from scratch and baked from scratch. I didn't have Oreos. I didn't have sugar cereal. It was always from scratch. And my grandmother cooked and baked, and so it kind of came from there. And my father, who was kind of like from, I say the South, Indiana was the South or is the South to me. So that's kind of where I got my comfort angle, which was my original, you know, style, because that's what you emulate what you know. But actually came from home and being in a home where things were from scratch.
Yeah. And then at what point did you decide to go on the journey of like this culinary adventure? Were you like, I need to go to school for this. I'm definitely going to be a chef. I really have this passion for this.
Yeah, you know, it was really a second career for me. I was always working in restaurants through high school and college. I was in tech. I had a recruiting company, and the market crashed. And so I was like, oh, shit, I'm screwed. So I actually went back to school and decided to pursue my passion and did Cordon Bleu. And kind of that's where it all kind of switched. And, you know, I said, let's make it happen. You know, and then Top Chef and catapulting me to, you know, New York and things like that. But yeah, it kind of started as a second career and like, oh my God, like I've just lost everything. What am I going to do?
Yeah. 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 We've had a lot of Le Cordon Bleu alums on the pod.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right. From Neil Patrick Harris's husband, David Burtka, to whom else? Chef Pink DeLongpre, I think, went to Le Cordon Bleu. Yeah, so many products. Le Cordon Bleu churning out, you know, the queer chefs of the world. You know what I mean?
I do.
A while ago, Michael Twitty, a friend to the pod and friend to me. I don't know if you know of Michael Twitty, but sent me on a journey of queer food and what queer food means. And this question just came to me because I mentioned queer Le Cordon Bleu churning out queer chefs of the world. Do you think there is a sector of queer food, of gay food that is out there?
I mean, queer food.
I love this question because it always, and I'm giving you some time to think here about it, but I love this question because it always dumps people sometimes, and the answers are vastly different and always interesting in regards to this topic.
I think that my interpretation, right, of this question and things is more of, you know, maybe we have different inspirational things that we tie what we do to. And maybe more willing sometimes to push things and push flavors and do things that aren't just so by the book. And you know, it's I have like my Cape Cod client and my New York client. Like, you know, people say, and you know, whether even if it's the housekeeper that's like, your food is different than everyone else that comes in here. She's like, you know, she was just saying to me this week when I just left Cape Cod yesterday. She's like, all your stuff tastes different. So maybe there's something in us that we put into our food. You know, I mean, good food is, it's about love and passion. And so maybe sometimes us queer folks, like, we're maybe more connected to that. So yeah. Maybe there's more of that in our food. So that's what I would say.
And I think to your point too, we as LGBTQ people, queer people are more often than not afraid to take risks.
Yes.
You know, because of what we've had to, you know, go through and the journeys that we've been on and things like that. And when it applies to our chosen careers, especially one in food, I think, to your point, you know, that something else different in there could possibly be the risk?
Yeah, I think so. Because I don't like the same old shit. You know, I don't like menu 101. I like to always keep going. And other chefs do this too, straight chefs too. But, you know, I always want to keep moving and evolving and having new things. And, of course, if we've got things that people love, we'll bring those back. But I like to keep it fresh, you know, when I'm talking on the private chef or even restaurant level. I just like to keep it fresh. I don't want to repeat all the old shit. You know, I want to keep it fresh. I want to keep it light, you know, bring in the merge of the living on both coasts and just continually growing and evolving and not, and just making it me. And it is personal. You know, some people are like, oh, don't take it so personally. It's like, personal to me.
It's a reflection of you.
Yes, exactly. So when people say that shit, it's like, you know, fuck off, stay in your office or whatever. Like, It is personal to me. I care. I mean, I'm almost crying now. That's me. You know, like, I really care about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, to your point, why I don't like the favorites question. Like, if I do an interview or I'm talking to friends or I meet somebody and they're like, oh, you're in this food space. What's your favorite this? And I was like, I don't really do favorites because I'm forever evolving, and I'm like, I'm always say, I have pregnant lady cravings. One day I want this, and the next day I want this, and nothing is ever really the same, you know?
Because I get that, obviously, all the time. You know, people, oh, what's your favorite dish to make? And then it's like, well, what are we talking about? What season is it? How am I feeling? What country am I in? You know, it's a constant variable. So I'm completely agreeing with that. And so,
well, I actually do know your favorite because it's Mexican food, and you wrote an entire book.
true
about it, which we are going to get to. Right.
Okay.
Right. We love a good teaser. We're going to get to it after the break. But before we get to the break, right? We always talk about coming out on the pod because our stories matter and we never know who's listening. And it's really, really important to share our stories because we never know who we can affect on this pod. And I was wondering if you would share your coming out story with us.
Sure. I was actually just sharing it with some folks last night. And, you know, for me, it was later in life. It was when I was 31. You know, I was always gay. Like, I knew. Of course I knew, but I didn't want to ever deal with it. And all my friends knew. But for me, I was not acting on it. Like, I wasn't doing it. So that was what I was able to... That's how I could keep it separate when people would call me whatever, you know, the names. I was like, I'm not, because I've never, like, been with a guy, right? So I did this whole thing, and I did the whole thing of, like, I started with saying I was bi, and then I was in therapy, and I went to Landmark, and I did all this shit to figure it out. And and then I hooked up with a guy. And so at that point was when I was able to, for myself, you know, it's something I still deal with present day, and I'm much older than 31. But yeah, that was when I finally did therapy and, you know, called my mom and did all that shit and just was like, this isn't about you, okay? This is me, and this is what it is, and it doesn't change me or who I am, but, you know, it took me a long time to get to that point. And, I mean, I'm in therapy today, and I still... It's something that I talk about, and, you know, like, I always use the term rainbow because I don't say gay and queer. You know, I'm very much in a hetero world. Like, my college friends, all these people that I've had for years, they all love me, and it's all great, but... And they don't care, but... I'm still a little bit repressed by myself. So I'm out and I'm doing it and I'm, you know, I'm strictly dickly and all that, but it's always kind of there for me, you know, even though I've dealt with it and told everyone and everyone knows and it's good and I'm gay and I'm queer and all those things, but it's a continual process for me. So
absolutely. Number one, thank you for sharing. All right. Number two, I have said more than once on this podcast, you know, no matter how out you are, it's for us as a community, there are several, I think, personally, you keep coming out, whether it's to yourself or to others in very different ways. You know what I mean? And it's this ever-evolving process, right? It's never just this one thing and you're done, right? Because you're always you if you're a growing person and an evolving person, right? You're going to discover new things about yourself, right?
Yes.
You're going to, right, do therapy, right? And highly recommend, love therapy, right? It's so good, right?
Yes.
Everybody should.
Yes.
But like to your, once again, to your point, right? You're making great points here that like, it's this ever-evolving process and this ever-changing thing within yourself, right? Because you change, and and the way you feel changes, and your environment changes, and things like that, right?
Totally. Well, and kind of what I think about, you know, we have the rainbow, right, and all the striations of color. That's kind of your evolution process, is kind of how I look. That's what I look at the rainbow as. That's what it means to me. It doesn't mean, you know, it means different things to people, but I just see that's kind of, I'm going through that and always kind of changing colors, if you will, like a chameleon. Not, you know what I mean? I'm being kind of crazy, but that's what I look to that as. That's
no, that absolutely
evolution.
Makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. And we, part of the reason this podcast started is because the food world, especially behind the line in the restaurant business, is very heteronormative. It's very toxic masculinity, right? And you brought up that you're in a very hetero space. Before we cut out to this break, talk to me about like the importance of being out in that space and what it's like.
I just think it's important for whether you're 15, 25, or 55, just to see that other people are being themselves, you know, because some people never come out and never deal with it. So I think just being yourself, and, you know, my opportunities to be on television and all these things, and just being myself, you know, that was maybe one of the first times that I could just really be me and say whatever I wanted and do whatever I wanted and put it out to the world. You know, it was pretty empowering. So I think that was a very big help for me to just be on TV, and just, I didn't give a fuck. And thankfully I ended up being funny and all that shit that came along with it, because that's who I am. But yeah, so I think I like to do it to maybe inspire just one person to, you know, be themselves and pursue what they want to do, and just show that your sexuality doesn't define you and where you can go.
Absolutely, absolutely. Representation matters, y'all. It matters in all its forms, right? Well, can't say it enough. And I don't know, Dave, have you seen the new Queer as Folk on Peacock?
No, I haven't. Is it good?
Oh,
really?
So good. Eight episodes, really? And it's really good. But but episode one, they start with the season finale, and it's a little trauma-inducing. So just pour yourself a glass of wine if you drink. And just be ready, right?
Okay.
But so good. Just on the heels of representation, right?
Okay.
And I really want to thank you just for, you know, opening up and having this conversation with me, right? Because it's important. And like I always say, every podcast at this point, you know, we do this for you in your mouth, listeners, because we never know who's listening, right? And we never know who we can affect. And we never know who, like, what opinions we can help people form, or, you know, who we can help carry through maybe a difficult moment. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so with that, I'm going to say thank you. And right now, Dave and I are going to go get some tequila, because we have a book to talk about and a diet. And we're going to be right back with my favorite part and your favorite part of the podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, in your mouth, listeners, I hope you're ready, Dave, because I'm taking you to my favorite part and the audience's favorite part of the podcast, a little something we like to call Food News Update.
Food news.
Ooh, honey,
you ain't ready,
girl. Spill the tea.
News Update.
McDonald's and Dairy Queen are currently involved in a roadside sign roast. Have you heard about this?
Right? I saw it. I didn't click. Tell me. Because I hate fucking McDonald's. I could do a blizzard if I had to, but I'm 17 years sober on fast food. So, yeah, tell me. I didn't do the click. What is it?
You know what I love about this, right, is that whomever's behind it is really just like, there has to be gay people behind it because it's witty. It's really witty and really bitey and like a little shady, you know, the whole thing. So McDonald's and Dairy Queen in some small Missouri city got into a sign roast where McDonald's posted something on a sign being like, hey, do you want to have a sign war? And Dairy Queen goes, no, we're too busy making ice cream. And then McDonald's like clapped back, you know? Okay. And Dairy Queen was like, oh, you sure your machines are working? You know? And then McDonald's goes, what's a milkman in pantyhose? A Dairy Queen. And it goes on and on and on. It's really, really hysterical. The bank got, like, Arvest Bank got involved being, like, you know, checking in on the sign war, you know. It's just really, really funny. Like, McDonald's clapped back, wow, salty, like our world-famous fries, right? And then Dairy Queen goes, why dine with a clown when you can dine with a queen?
Oh, I have to check it out. It sounds pretty entertaining.
It'll take 5 minutes of your day. Perfect. I think it's joy-seeking, right?
Yes.
Especially with all, like, the news cycle, right? Especially with the current news cycle. If you're driving down the road in whatever small-town Missouri city this is, I would think it's something to look forward to.
Like,
right? What are the antics these two people are trying to pull? I'm surprised. I guess they can do it because they're franchises, both of them, right?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So they're not necessarily beholden, like, lock hard to, like, corporate, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think things. they have a little leeway, and they're keeping it fun and clean, and it's actually creating interest, and maybe someone's driving through because of that. So,
yeah. Well, the shadiest queen of them all is Wendy's, you know? That Wendy's Twitter is vicious. And we love her.
Yes.
We love her. She needs to come on this podcast, whomever runs that Twitter.
Does that, yeah.
That homosexual needs to come on this podcast.
Totally.
For sure. I think we're here for this, right? I think we could be here for this. Like, a little fun shade, you know, a little nice shade between to brighten up the day of the people in small town Missouri, right?
Yes.
As long as it's not Chick-fil-A, I think we can totally be here for it. This LA restaurant is willing to trade free food for bottles of sriracha. Can you believe this? There is a sriracha shortage. I can't, and I just discovered that I cannot say the word sriracha. Sriracha.
Yeah. What restaurant is that?
There is, and thank you to Food and Wine, who's still not a sponsor, but always keeps me in up to date with my latest food news. So there is a Vietnamese restaurant in L.A. that's willing to trade some of its less spicy menu items for unopened bottles of this delicious hot sauce. The restaurant is called Bayou, and they wrote on Instagram, of all the supply chain issues in the world, this one feels personal. And so, according to the Instagram post, anyone who takes a box fresh 28-ounce bottle of sriracha to Bayou will get a coupon for a free banh mi sandwich, popcorn chicken, or order of summer rolls. And customers who are willing to part with a 17-ounce bottles will get half off their order. They go about 312 bottles a year, so any little bit helps, they wrote.
That's crazy that we're out of sriracha now. I mean, I have plenty. thankfully, and Sambal, but it's the same company, Huifeng Foods, that makes both of those products.
Yes, I love Sambal.
Oh, that's better. I prefer that because then you can modify how you wish. But wasn't it a pepper issue? Was that the issue?
Yeah, it's the pepper issue that they didn't get harvested in time, or there weren't enough people to harvest them.
Working. Yeah.
Yes. It's like the COVID domino effect is what it is.
Yeah. Still rolling out.
You know, I thought this was very, you know, this was a very good topic since you consult in a lot of restaurants. Is this a tactic you would ever use to kind of bring in a product that you would need to help a restaurant out?
No. I mean, again, they're, you know, probably a small, you know, maybe one unit or a couple of unit operation, but you've just got to figure out to make your own, you know, make something similar. I get it that they're out of it, but you got to, like, you know, pay someone.
You got
to
pivot all change.
Come in and I'll make it for you. We'll create a recipe that works to get you through it, you know, and then just make that be your staple. Cause you can't run out of a core ingredient like that. And
well, especially in Vietnamese food, you know what I mean?
It's key.
Yeah.
So delicious. I would pay someone to help develop something for them in the interim.
Yes. Right. Oh, so you're going to pay to help somebody develop? Is that what you
like me? Yeah.
Oh, get it. Listen, Bay-Oo, if you're listening, this Dave Martin is available to help. Yes. Okay. We are going to get you paid, Dave.
Totally.
Well, if you're in LA and you have an extra bottle unopened, of course, of Sriracha, head out and get yourself, I want the banh mi, popcorn chicken. I could do without popcorn chicken, you know?
Yeah.
Banh mi, definitely, or summer rolls, delicious. Absolutely. Oh, last week, Chef Michael Silverstein and I went down a long road of the spicy chili oil. I'm obsessed. I've been obsessed.
I love all that stuff. Where are you based? Are you on east or west?
I'm in New York City.
Do you go to Huayuan? Huayuan. Do you know it? It's in Chinatown.
No.
You got to go. Best Asian in the U.S. They've been around since the 70s. They created the original cold sesame noodle dish. They've got the Szechuan chili oil. You've got to ask for it. They'll bring it to the table. They cure their own Peking ducks there. I'm telling you, it's a must-go. Super clean, delicious. The sun rebuilt it and made this super cool. It's very nice and fancy, but very clean Asian, where there's like not a bunch of oil on your plate. I'm telling you, you've got to go. And
okay,
if you
all right.
They've got the chili oil. Just say, can I get the chili oil? And it's the Szechuan with the little chilies you put on everything.
I'm obsessed.
You got to go.
I'm obsessed. I'm a hot sauce fanatic. And last but not least, I think we're here for this, right? Anything to keep a restaurant afloat, especially if it's delicious. And last but not least, there is a whiskey out there. I know it's not a tequila, Dave, but there is a whiskey out there made from crabs.
I saw that. We must have the same feed. But
I mean, first and foremost.
I'll take a sip, you know, and see what's up. Because it's probably going to add a salt or briny quality to it, is what I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But
apparently you read the article.
I didn't, but I'm just, hello, chef, I better know that. So,
yeah.
But that's what I would imagine. And so it could be interesting. And, you know, probably could make a great whiskey-based Bloody Mary.
Oh, my God, delicious, right?
You know,
right?
And using
with a little bit of the Old Bay hot sauce. Have you had the Old Bay hot sauce?
Uh-huh.
Oh, so good. Well, I'm not a big whiskey person, but apparently green crabs pose a problem to coastal ecosystems. And one New Hampshire distillery has come up with this tasty solution. So green crabs emigrated from, where is it in this article? I lost it. But green crabs originally crossed the Atlantic via European merchant ships in the 1800s. And the issue is they burrow into the sand where they can eat as many as 50 clams, oysters, or mussels a day, which plagues shell fisheries. So this distillery in New Hampshire came up to address this issue, and they boil these crabs because there's not a lot of yield out of green crabs.
Okay.
Which means that, like, it's a lot of work, you know?
Sure.
For nothing. And so they come up with this stock, which they add to their modified sour mash. And then they have this custom spice blend mixture consisting of paprika, bay, mustard seed, coriander seed, dill seed, cinnamon, clove, and allspice, reminiscent of a low country boil. The final product is described as a briny, better fireball.
I want to try it now. It sounds very interesting.
Well, listen, fireball is problematic. No shade, fireball. But you know, if the fireball comes out, you are not going to remember the evening. No, ma'am.
No. And wasn't there something that came out a couple years back that there was like a component that's in antifreeze in it? I'm like, I'm good. It's like the yoga mats and the Subway sandwiches, you know? So
yes. So yeah.
No. But I will try I'll try the crab whiskey. It sounds a little more.
Yeah.
You know,
it sounds luxury, if anything.
It does. Fun and unique, and like I said, I think a perfect thing for a whiskey-based Bloody Mary, you know?
Yeah, like late summer. Like where there's like a cool breeze in the evening,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Something lovely like that.
Yeah.
We are here for this. You know what? Last week, Dave, we were here for none of the food news, and this week, we are here for all of them, and I think that's a great way to end. Food news update. And what a great transition into this book of yours, the hot sauce of it all, because I am staring at my little baker's rack and I can see Valentina, I can see Tapatio, mm-hmm. I can see Huichol, I can see Cholula, I can see the freaking Rican Sazon spice blend, right?
Mm-hmm.
So big flavors, a lot of Mexican flavors, right? Because there's a lot of Mexican hot sauces or Mexican style hot sauces on the shelf. What inspired you to create the tequila diet? And is it really a diet?
Yeah, so part one of that question, I actually had come back from a trip to Italy and just been doing tons of wine and pasta. And listen, I love Italy. But yeah, I maybe wasn't walking as much that trip and put on some poundage. And I was like, you know, I'm gay. I can't be heavy. So in my mind, you know, the vein thing comes through.
Yeah, gay body dysmorphia. It's a thing.
Fucking totally. So I came back and tequila was always in my repertoire. I'm pretty much wine and tequila. That's it. I don't really drink anything else. And so I just said, I can't drink any wine. So for like 8 or 10 weeks, I drank only tequila. I mean, I ate and worked out and all those things to kind of get back in balance, but I lost like 11 or 12 pounds. So I was living in the city at the time and I was like, I'm on the tequila diet. I'm losing weight. It started as like a skit, one of my stupid stories that I was telling everyone. It was funny and great. And then now it's a book, but I jumped ahead real quick. So a couple months later, I ended up getting reached. A buddy of mine from Sun Valley, Idaho, reached out and said, hey, I've got this tequila group. They're coming to coming to Sun Valley. They want to do a Mexican dinner. That's not my thing. Can you help out? I jumped in. We did this charity event. I pitched the idea to the tequila brand. They loved it. And now 5 years later, we have a book. So it kind of started as this skit and turned into something real that I, you know, it ended up becoming, yes, tequila focused, but not just cocktails and food and my whole, I mean, I just love Mexican food. So that's really what it's about, is a lot of my favorite dishes that I've worked on, you know, for years that are brought.
What
together.
Is it about the Mexican food that you love so much?
You know, Mexican food, one, I grew up within Southern California and being back in San Diego now, I'm right next to the border. So I just love, it's maybe that home cooking that it reminds me of my childhood and my mom cooking and the Mexican family and the people and the culture. Like, you know, they love their, most cultures do, well, a lot of the great ones. And so maybe that's what the inspiration is I love the grandma making the salsas and the tortillas and the tamales and the holidays. And, you know, there's a big cultural component that really draws me to that style of cuisine, along with all the flavors and textures. And there's so much greatness to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I was in Puerto Vallarta, and this is why I'm so excited to go to Mexico City this week.
Oh, and yeah. I'll send you my list.
Yes, please do, because we've never been, and we are so excited. Okay. But In Your Mouth listeners, if you want the list, you got to write to us, right?
Yes.
And follow Chef Dave. Hello. But, like, I was just in Puerto Vallarta at the end of May for, I did go to the beach once for Pride. And I was on the taco diet, just the taco diet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was filling, it was delicious. You felt like you weren't eating unnecessary calories. You felt like you were getting vegetables and protein and, like, healthy fats And so many good things that it's just like, I mean, and even like there's this salsa molcajete that they make for you. Oh my God, it's my favorite thing in the world.
I have the place you're going to go. That's what they specialize in Mexico City. It's the best version. They bring a cart to your table.
Yep.
And you pick and choose all the roasted and beef, and she makes it for you right there. It's that is one of my favorite salsas.
It's just, you know, out of all the cuisines of the world, correct me if I'm wrong, right? But I have been very fortunate, and mainly because of work, to be able to travel a lot. But, like, out of all the cuisines of the world, besides barbecue, like, there is this, like, richness to Mexican cuisine that is not... that is based out of smoke and earthiness that you don't find anywhere else, right? Right?
I'm
at a loss for words here.
No, that's definitely the case, and definitely, you know, regionally there's different impacts. Like Oaxacan region, they're known for all of their meats and the smoked meats, and there's a restaurant I have for you in Mexico City that's what they celebrate and that's what they do, and that you'll love that as well. But there's just a lot of depth of flavor and layers of flavors and things like that. And if we can go back to the tacos that you were eating in Mexico, here's an important point that I think people need to realize too, is the American taco is not the taco you have in Mexico. Like, it's not covered in cheese and shit, okay? It is a homemade tort. It's the protein. It's the pickled veg.
Yeah.
Here and there might be a sprinkle of cotija or queso fresco, but that is not... that's not the Mexican taco.
And no, and the quesadilla, the same. You're not getting, like, these two heavy flour tortillas with all this, like, junk and cheese in the middle of it. There is actually a place right up the block from me called Los Tacos Número Uno, and these guys came from California. I forget what they were doing before, and they opened up this shop in Chelsea Market first. And they're the number one taco in Manhattan, and it's as authentic as you're going to get here.
Okay.
In Manhattan, they even grind their own corn
to make
the masa for the corn tortillas and whatnot. Everything, and I often see a lot of tourists and people go in and like order the quesadilla, and it's not that. It's like there's a little cheese on the griddle. They throw the tortilla, they pick it up, they put the stuff in it, and they hand it to you, and you peace out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's how are you killer keeping... tortillas?
Yeah. Oh my God. The tortillas are insane. Mm. And then for whatever they don't sell, they have what they call the burro cart in the morning. And they sell these breakfast burritos. And they're cigars. They're literally like not like a Chipotle brand, massive fucking chunk of like disgusting garbage burrito, right? Even though Chipotle can be tasty sometimes if you're wasted, but you know, they're like really thin and skinny, and I'm imagining maybe they make it fresh, right? But I'm imagining that like they're taking whatever they didn't use and throwing
proteins and
rolling it in. They're delicious.
Yeah.
But on that note of authenticity, how did you manage to keep the authenticity in this book, right? And like as an homage to the culture?
Yeah, you know, again, I've spent a lot of time in Mexico. I'm in Mexico 4 to 6 times a year in the various regions. And so I've done a lot of research, you know, via mouth to stomach, but and meeting some of the people. But You know, I've kept the book very real in terms of flavors with some of my stylings thrown in, you know, like I've got a bacon fat flour tortilla and things like that. We're not making the masa, but, you know, keeping things true and authentic, you know, with access to ingredients and things like that as possible. How was I able to do that? Yeah, it's, we do have access to so many things, you know, whether you order from Amazon or whatever. So you really can keep it pretty true. You know, the recipes vary in simpler things like salsas to a mole, you know, which is one of my favorites, or triple chili enchilada sauce, which really is more ingredients and a little bit of technique. But whenever I do a different project, like I've done an Indian joint, a Russian joint, a Malaysian joint, I really keep
a Georgian joint. Mm-hmm. Which is delicious. Chama Mama.
Oh,
if you come across Chama Mama, delicious.
Oh, wow. That's great. I know they've got two locations now, which is crazy. But, you know, so something that's very important for me is I keep the ingredients true to what they're really using. So, like, you're not going to see, yes, there's bacon fat in the tortillas and a bacon fat refried bean, but I make sure I keep the ingredients real to the regions and not like a bunch of, this is not American Mexican. This is very true Mexican, from the chilies to the beans to whatever. And we're making all those from, you know, it's not canned beans. We're cooking the beans. So I've just kind of done it by being real to the ingredients, I guess.
And I ask the question because nothing incenses me more than watching Ree Drummond make sheet pan quesadillas like she invented them. Like she invented them. And for those of you new around here, and even for those of you who have been listening to me for a while, I'm not saying that the woman can't make a quesadilla. Make all the American style, Mexican inspired quesadillas you want. Do it. But you can't come to the table like you invented the ish. This is whole like brand new, like, you know what
please,
I mean?
Please, no.
And so
I can't.
We live in a world where we have a lot of access. We have a lot of access, and we have, whether that's to information, to communities, to people, to ingredients, to whatever. Like, why not? Why not, if you're going to do this, pay a little homage or you know, like bring in...
Truly celebrate the culture. Don't try to make it yours. Like, you know, I'm a white kid from SoCal. I am not Hispanic, you know, but I'm giving my closest rendition and version and appreciating the people and the ingredients and not bastardizing it, you know, and calling it something that it's not. Like, you know, I mean, the recipes are mine and created by my work in the kitchen and testing them, but they come from those people and their culture.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, congratulations on your book, and I can't wait to get my hands on it for sure. Let the kids know where they can find it.
Yeah, you can go to mytequiladiet.com, and that shows all the platforms that you can get it, everything from Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's everywhere online. The ebook is as low as $9.99, so like, there's not a better deal out there. My Tequila Diet is the easiest platform, which will show you everywhere to go. But if you Google it, it comes up in all the searches, and you can click through and buy it wherever you like. But it's everywhere. Yeah, online.
Yeah.
And the heart, you can get the paperback and everything too.
Based
on what platform you prefer. Yeah.
You know, if I didn't live in 120 square feet in Times Square, I think I'd have an entire library of just cookbooks.
They're fun to just look at.
Yeah, they're just fun to like flip through good ones.
Yes. And we've got some great pictures, and I did everything from all the cooking and food set. I didn't take the photos. We had professionals for that, but
of course.
Very real and approachable, and it's a fun book to look at and cook through and drink through.
Yes. How do you feel about who was it? That 818 tequila? Is that Kylie Jenner's?
Oh God! Yeah,
the Kardashians.
I can't do anything with the K word attached. No. Yeah. I mean, The Rock's got a tequila, which I haven't tried or heard. It's not that great. There's so many. Everyone owns spirits now, but I haven't tried the Kardashian stuff.
Listen, I brought it full circle back to reality TV.
Yes, you did.
See, You see what I did there?
Yes, and I
don't watch those ladies, you know?
No.
Listen, I can't be mad at them for their hustle, and they did their thing, and now they run the world. Like, good for you.
Yeah.
It's just not for me. You know what I mean?
Just keep them out of my feed. They can do their thing.
Honestly. Before we close out, favorite recipe from the book?
I mean, it would have to be my mole negro. I mean, that's one of my favorite sauces when I'm in Mexico. Like, I literally drink it at breakfast. To me, it's one of the best dishes/sauces in the world because of the depth of flavor, from the chocolate to the golden raisins to the cinnamon to the allspice. That's my number one.
All right. In your mouth, listeners, something to look forward to. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dave, for coming on and playing with me and laughing with me and just telling your story. Let the kids know where they can find you, how they can find you. Give us all the handles.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. I'm basically at Chef Dave Martin on all platforms, as well as at My Tequila Diet on all platforms. So it's very easy to find me out there. So please hit me up, DM me if you need to.
Yep, right. Slide into those DMs, but slide in respectfully, please.
Yes, please.
Okay. Unless you're really hot, and then maybe...
Yes.
But there's a caveat because if you send some nonsense to Dave is allowed to share with me.
Oh,
so
totally.
I can reprimand or just gawk.
Totally.
That's something I haven't said on this pod in forever. Oh my God. Well, thank you, Dave, again for giving me of your time out of your busy schedule today. You know, it's an honor, and I'm so happy to be here and so happy to have you as part of my big gay food village now. You are always welcome here. In your mouth, listeners, it is second week of August. You better get to the beach. Well, I better get to the beach. And if you haven't been to the beach, throw on some SPF, take an umbrella. Get there, get in those last minute, like summer vibes, that last minute frosé if you drink, but drink responsibly. Get out there, take care of yourselves. LGBTQ fam, go out there and get your vaccines, your COVID vaccine, your monkeypox vaccine, or orthopox vaccine is what we're calling it now. It is very important. We got to keep this community safe. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look up at Dr. Carlton on Instagram. He is one of the only doctors, a few doctors I see out there, trying to get the community the information that they need to keep us safe and healthy. It is important. The merch is still on sale at www.themunoz.com/mouthmerch. And obviously, go show Chef Dave Martin all the love on Instagram. Other than that, all I have to say is thank you for listening to In Your Mouth.
Goosebumps.